just Kala Kodesha, there. This is honeycomb, one of the most amazing constructions in the natural world. And the chlal, the beehive, is one of the most amazing min chlal tabria, literally. The honey bee is an extraordinary worker. Majority of bees in the hive, 25 to maybe 40,000 bees in the hive, produce wax. They build the comb. They clean the hive. They defend the hive. They repair it. They feed the larva, the queen, and the drones. They gather nectar, pollen, water, resin, ventilate the hive. Have some understanding of what this means. To get 1 pound of honey, bees have to visit more than 2 million flowers. And they travel a distance equivalent to twice around the earth to get 1 pound of honey. The bees have the most extraordinary navigational skills. Various experiments have been made with bees, how they find their way to flowers which have a good supply of nectar, how they communicate this to the other bees. And they do this by means of a dove, the famous bee dove. And the chlal, one could give a whole lecture just on the amazing substance, honey, and its nutritional value, and its delicious nature, everything it contributes to the life of man. The question we have to concern ourselves with in the very limited time this morning is whether honey, in fact, is kosher. And if it's kosher, how is it kosher? Truth is, the Gemara uses the expression, why is it they said that honey is mutter? Everybody knows that honey is mutter. In fact, we find it in various psukim in the Torah. I actually originally entitled this talk, it slipped off the poster, unfortunately, Ma'at Devash. Because in last week's parasha, we find the first mention of Devash in the Torah. It gave to Yosef a gift, six things, Ma'at Sori, or Ma'at Devash, Nechoyos, Velos, Botnim, Meshkedim. So some of them we remember well. Rashi tells us the Botnim are the pistachio nuts. That sorry is a little balsam, ma'at devash is a little devash, a little honey. Difficult to understand what this, a little jar of pre-Rosh Hashanah gift of honey for Yosef, what was the greatness of that? These must all have been things which are very rare in Mitzrayim, as the foreign of them, the fortune say. The interesting three of the six were things which were sent down by the Ishmaelite merchants trading with Egypt, because obviously they were things that were very rare in Egypt. If it was bee honey, we'd have to say there were no. There were no bees in the Mitzrayim, which is difficult to understand. If it's palm honey, what happened to the palms? Were there no palms? Because it was a time of famine. These were the substances all which were preserved, which lasted a long time. So maybe it was bee honey, maybe it was palm honey. The truth is that Chazal tell us, Rashi tells us indeed in Eruvin, some might recall, kol devash ha'om avatera devash tomorrow. That generally speaking, when you find, and Rashi says kol, I think, because I've just translated it, generally speaking, when you find honey, dvash, mentioned in the Torah, it refers to dvash tamarim, honey dripping from the date palms. The reason I say generally is because there is, in fact, a limud in the Tosefta in Shavuos that honey is one, honey of bees, is one of the shiva mashkim, because it says, by yenikehu dvash misela. So you see that dvash in the Torah is sometimes, at least according to that Tosefta, understood as meaning honey of Dvash Devoyer. However, honey in Chazal, whenever you find it in the Mishnah, Dvash, whenever you find it in the Gemara, Balash in Chachomim, it's always Dvash Devoyer. It's interesting, by the way, the Rashi does tell us on that pasuk with the Nechoyos, Ma'at Dvash Nechoyos salute, the Nechoyos he brings from the Targum is Shavo, which everybody seems to understand is beeswax. So therefore, something from the hive was part of the gift which was given. We know also the famous stories in Tanakh, Shaul, in a pasuk about Yonasan, which we say in Amot Shabbos, Vayom Ha'om El Shaul HaYonasan Yom HaTashot LaHashua HaZosbi. Should he die? Why should he die? Because he ate, you may recall, honey after Shaul made a Shavuah that nobody should eat anything that day. And what did he eat? He ate Yaros Dvash. And many of the Mefarshim, of the Rishonim, understand those Yaros Dvash with Dvash Devorim, bee honey. Of course, with Shimshon, the famous riddle with Shimshon, may ha'oichel yotza machol, may ha'av yotza mosek, the only time, the riddle, remember, which Shimshon gave to his friends, what is the sweet that comes out of the strong? And if you want your own riddle, you can take it home and ask your kids, where do you find a posuk in the larder, in the pantry? Very good. On the Tate and Lyle golden Adam would say that. On the Tate and Lyle golden syrup, or well, actually had it on golden syrup, it's got a picture of the lion with all the bees coming out of it, and it says, from the strong comes forth sweet. Which is very interesting. But we know that that in fact was Glash, and it says the Shimshon ate of it and he gave it to others to eat, so we know that that is in fact, we know it's kosher. But it shouldn't be kosher because it's a yotze mina. One of the amazing things about it is that it's the only substance, basically, the only substance, a yotze mina tomei tomei, which comes from an impure source, and yet we say it's kosher. The Mishnah Bechorah says the only things which come from a pure source are kosher. That's why Chazal said your milk should be supervised, because maybe it's camel's milk, maybe it's donkey's milk. If it comes from an impure animal, it's impure. Only if you know it comes from the pure animal, is it pure. Because therefore, honey is a classic substance. Comes from the bee. We know how many larvae, 6 larvae for eating a flying creature. That's why we're so makpid. I'm checking our vegetables and our fruit. Chalila, we should swallow a little insect. So the bee is as trace as it can possibly get, and yet the substance which it produces is kosher. First, we should understand a little bit about the honey process in order to be able to approach this. In order to produce honey, the bees collect a sugary fluid, which is known as nectar, from the flowers. And they process it in a body cavity. They eat it effectively, it goes down into their throats, but it stops. It doesn't go all the way into the regular stomach, it stops in the honey sac, which is known as the crop. You could call it the zefek, like you have in various birds. And there, the sugar, which is primarily sucrose, is inverted in this crop or honey sac into glucose and fructose. It's not exactly nectar. It is changed by means of various enzymes which are produced by the bee, primarily amongst them invertase. We know invertase well. I know invertase well. You might not know invertase well, because invertase well is a classic enzyme which is used in confectionery production. If you ever wondered how it is, you eat a chocolate with a soft center. How does it get the soft center into the chocolate? They inject it with a syringe. And one of the ways of doing this, standard method, is they actually make the center solid. And then they enrobe it with chocolate, and the enzyme invertase, which is there present in the center, changes the center afterwards from solid into a liquid. So anyway, sucrose is changed into glucose and fructose by means of various enzymes which is secreted by the bees. There's a lot of discussion in halacha whether enzymes are problematic or not problematic, but according to this, if you say that honey is kosher, the enzymes by those don't travel off either, it would seem to be a stickler, either enzymes are not a problem, depending on how one understands the heter for honey. When they get back to the hive, the bees regurgitate this nectar, and it's placed in the honeycomb cells. The bees evaporate water from the nectar until it's below 18% water by fanning the hive with their wings, and the honey is stored as food for the bee colony. Most of it today, except possibly in the wild hives which man has not yet discovered, most of it is taken, of course, for man's consumption, although the Gemara tells us and the beekeepers know, you've got to leave at least 2 combs in the hive, otherwise the hive will die over the winter because it's actually food for the bees. The bees also produce other kinds of products. Beeswax is a classic because the honeycomb is made by the bees, and the honeycomb is made of wax. And the wax has nothing to do with the nectar. The wax is secreted by various glands on the stomach of the bee. And it's of great importance to us because it's also used, once again, in the food industry. It's used to a certain extent in flavours, and it's used also as a polish. So if you want sweets or to be polished up, and sometimes even for a release agent on trays, on conveyor belts, you have some quite sophisticated greasing agents, beeswax is used quite commonly. So we need to know whether beeswax is kosher as well. A famous product manufactured by the bee is something called royal jelly. Royal jelly, again, has nothing to do with nectar. It's secreted from glands on the head of the bees. Actually from the mandibular and the pharyngeal glands, for those who need to know these things. And this is used to nourish, first of all, the young bees for the first 2 or 3 days of their life. They're given royal jelly to get them well on their way. And the queen bee, however, is fed entirely and totally only on royal jelly all of her life. Interesting, the queen bee lives about 5 to 6 years, where the regular worker bee, has to work a lot harder, it's true, the regular worker bee only lasts for 6 or 7 weeks. And apart from the work that they do, the big difference is in what they feed. One eats honey, the other one eats only royal jelly. And royal jelly, according to those people who believe in homeopathy and alternative medicine, is the most amazing substance. It revitalizes, it rejuvenates youth. It is essentially, according to you believe, the literature is an elixir of life. You can look at the literature, you can look at Diane Waldenberg's Cuba on royal jelly, where he quotes what people say about it, that it will rejuvenate your life, bring back all sorts of properties which you may have lost, and it'll do everything for you, and bar to actually turn you into a queen bee. So we need to know where the royal jelly is kosher. There are many folks in the dealt with this, because it's very important. There are other things in the hive as well. One is something called bee bread, which essentially the bees compact pollen together with royal jelly, so if the royal jelly is kosher, the bee bread will be as well. And there is also propolis, which is a kind of putty, which is made of resin collected by the bees from trees, mixed with wax and saliva. And most interesting, this propolis is used by the bees to coat the inside of the hive and to seal up any cracks so there are no drafts, so no insects can get in and no bacteria can get in. And apparently it has the most wonderful antibiotic and antifungal, antibacterial properties, propolis, so that it effectively disinfects the hive and disinfects the bees. And it is said that the beehive is the most sterile environment found in nature as a result of the use of this propolis. And in fact, every single bee which comes into the hive has to go through a tunnel of propolis, which effectively disinfects the bee from any kinds of bacteria might have picked up on its journey. When you go into a food factory today, very often you have to walk through a little pool of water to disinfect your shoes in case you're bringing any kind of bacteria impurity into the food factory. This was invented thousands of years ago by the Boreolum. When you go into a hive, when a bee comes in, it has to get entirely disinfected so as not to spoil the sterile environment. This is claimed again by many people to be a cure-all for everything from the common cold to stomach ulcers. Propolis will save the day. So we need to know whether propolis also is a kosher substance or is not. The Gemara in Bechoros, which is where one needs to start on this, says, why is bee honey kosher? Of course it's not kosher, but why is it kosher? Mipnei shemachnisos osei legufon ve'ino mematzos osei legufon. Because it is merely reprocessed nectar, it is not an actual secretion of the insect. Machnisos legufon, they take it into their body and they take it out of their body, they're merely carrying it back to the hive, that's all they're doing. Ve'ino mematzos, and it's not a mitzui boso, it's not produced by the flesh of the bee. There is another machlokes there in Bechoros, Rabbi Yaakov holds it's a gezeirus hakosov. A gezeirus hakosov, interesting gezeirus hakosov, which is the pasuk says in Shemini, Duvshe Rachmona Sharia, the Tanya, Ach Eser Toichlu Mikol Sheretoiv. Only this you may eat from a Sheretoiv. Ach Eser Zamiot. Only this means only these particular kinds of locusts, which were the Arba and the Solom locusts, which are mutar for achila. Only these you may eat. To exclude other things which you may not eat. V'yi'ata ochel sheretzos tomei, you may not eat any other flying creatures. Says the Gemara, sheretzos tomei behedya k'siv. Of course you can't eat other kinds of flying creatures. The Ferish Apostle, you can't eat creepy crawlies or flying crawlies. Behedya k'siv. Ela, it's a different kind of drosha. Sheretzos tomei i'ata ochel masher, ata ochel masher, oif tomei mashritz. So it's almost a play on the word sheret. Achez der tochel mikol sheret. This you may eat, however, from a sheretz. And that is which the sheretz is mashuit. And what is it? It's drash devorim. That's drash devorim. That which is produced by the sheretz, however, you may eat. And it's talking specifically about drash devorim. It says Gemara, who says it's drash devorim? Maybe it's talking about af gizin, drash gizin, with tziroim. I see people translate this as wasp honey and other kinds of honey, but I understand that wasps actually don't make honey at all. But the bumblebee makes honey, and certain other species of bees do make honey, small amounts of it. So maybe other kinds of dvash gizin, dvash tsuroin is also going to be kosher. Answers the Gemara, ma'avani dvash tsuroin she ain lo shem levai. Motiani dvash gizin tsuroin she yesh lo shem levai. We are only including regular honey because it has no additional descriptive term. Honey. Honey is honey means bee honey. However, the other kinds of honey, which will always be described as wasp honey, or this kind of honey, that kind of honey, they are excluded. It's only general honey which is included. The Gemara says there's enough kamina between the two, as I've just begun to bring out, which is whether other kinds of honey are kosher or not. If you say, according to the first ayah, that it's machnisos eina mamatzos, they merely process it and they don't produce it, then every kind of creature which processes and doesn't produce, right, any kind of other bee which collects nectar and turns it into honey, or indeed maybe you'll find other kinds of creatures, which we will in a moment if we have time, which find things and produce and take them into the body and regurgitate them in some slightly similar way, that would also be kosher. However, according to the second day of the Gezeirah Sakosha, the Gezeirah Sakosha only applies to regular bee honey and does not apply to anything else. It's a machlokes in the Gemara, it's a machlokes of poskim. The Rambam, Rabbeinu Tam, the Maimonides, the Ruah, all paskin like the first ayah, and that's the first ayah in Shulchan Aruch, i.e., machnisos ve'inam mamatzos. They produce it, so they process it, and they don't produce it. However, the Rosh, Rambam, Rabbeinu Tam, paskin like the second shita, Rabbi Yaku, that it is a gzeirah sakosha. Therefore, it is only honey, nothing else. The Shulchan Aruch brings that down as well. B'shei, yesh mishorim. The poskim say, the Prichovash and others, that this is esophagus of the raisa. You can't eat the bee, you can't eat anything which is yotza from tomei. So therefore, unless you say it's a gzeirah sakosha or something else, it's going to be, it's esophagus of the raisa. Therefore, you have to be machmir. Now, interestingly, the Rama says, on comments on this, that Eon is Tarichim Lachushle. We don't have to worry about this Machlokes, or maybe even we don't need to worry about the Yesh Misha Oser, who's going to have the effect that the Dvash Gizim Tarayim Oser, Ke Eon Motsu Deinedu. Because we don't find such a thing amongst us today. We don't find what's on. You can safely go into the shop, you don't need to have supervision, as it were, to check that it came from the honeybee, because you don't find the other kinds of honey. That's the shop. So heat is not a problem. But for us it certainly is a problem, because we've got all these other substances. The royal jelly, for example. If you're going to say, according to the second day, the second day, we are only matir something honey because it's machnisos in on the matzos. They collect it from somewhere and then they regurgitate it. That's honey, that's not royal jelly, which comes from these glands on the head. That's going to be also. But if you say it's a gzeirah hakosov, that what the honey bee produces is mutter, Mashrit is mutter, and we can mutter that the royal jelly as well. Secondly, we find other kinds of substances. We are a bit pressured this morning, but there is an important substance called shellac. Now shellac, you used to find it's not on the ingredient list, you don't find it now, I don't know why they try to hide it. They usually call it glaze or confectioner's glaze. Some people might recall an old advertisement from years gone by, maybe they still have it, I don't know, about Maltesers that they melt in the mouth and not in the hand. Why do they not melt in the hand? Because they're covered with a glaze, a varnish. Now most types of artificial varnish are not terribly good for you, but a natural varnish, shellac, there's a little insect grows on trees, that lives on trees in India, and it puts its prosthosis into the tree, and it sucks up the resin from the tree, and it exudes or secretes a kind of shell-like covering. It's almost a microscopic insect, but millions of them are scraped off the tree with the shell, processed, get rid of the insects, and you have this kind of resin which is produced by the lac insect. Would that be mutter? Would that be awesome? If you say, like the first day of Machnisos, Einan Mamatzos, then we're off to a very good start to say they are merely reprocessing this resin. They take it in and they exude it. So we could maybe be mutter the lac. If on the other hand it's a gzeirah sakosha, it's a gzeirah sakosha, but it doesn't refer to anything else. There is a gvaltig, a third maskemina, which is a chiddush, it's a fantastic ha'ora, which I heard from Dai Westheim Shlita, where he said that in days gone by, of course, the bees went out and they had to fly millions of miles, or wherever we saw, twice around the world, and they collect nectar from the flowers. But nowadays, the farmed bees has much easier ways of finding their sweetness, and that is that the farmers feed them, put out for them sources of sweetness. sources of sugar. And one of the things that they use sometimes is glucose. Now, if you're going to say like the first, which science glucose is perfectly kosher, but if you're going to say like the first day that it is machniso, the only reason it's mutter is because it is essentially nectar, which they've taken in with this. So this is essentially glucose, which they've taken in and changed it a little bit with an enzyme, and it's glucose. Now, most glucose is chometz. I know it's a little bit of a shiny red hydroshes on it, but la locha la maisa, we take on the glucose. If it came from grain origin, wheat origin, as most of it does today in Europe, then you have to assume that it's awesome. So everybody assumes you send mashkichim, they see the honey coming out of the hive, they go back to the hive, they see the honey coming out of the hive, or it's kosher, it's not contaminated by any other flavors, any other additional substances, which apparently happened. There was a big scandal in China a few years ago, it found to be adding other things to honey. But you know, it's 100% pure honey, but nobody chases the bee to see where he collected the honey, the nectar from in the first place. So if you're going to say the whole head is machnisos, then it's the same old glucose, so it should be also. And in fact, sometimes they use lees as well. The leftover of the wine that is also a very good source of sugar and sweetness to the bees. Could that be also the shayla then of stam yenom? Now, the truth is, the many of the poskim, Rishon Zalman Ogach, the Chayim Vrocha, Diane Waldenberg in Sitte Eliezer, Lahabdu Ben Chayim Lachayim, I think, deals at great length, his long tshuva on this, and he says that royal jelly is mutter. According to the second dayah, he is the gzeiras hakosos, so everything which comes from the bee is mutter. Not only the honey, it's the gzeiras hakosos, it's nothing to do with mamatzos and the machnisos, it's the gzeiras hakosos. Everything which the bee is mashwitz is mutter. What about the other tzad, the first dayah? It's because of processing. So he quotes the pre-tayah, other people bring this pre-tayah as well. That it's not true that it's mamish, literally a wheat processing. Honey is not nectar. The pre-tayah says very graphically, you take flowers and you squeeze them, you're not going to get honey out of them. You cannot produce honey from flowers. But rather, it is a secretion of the bee. But the chiddush of the halacha is that since the whole force of this nutrition originally comes from the flowers, it's not considered to be a mitzui bos or secretion of the bee. It's considered to be reprocessing. It's not really just bringing the nectar back. So that way, it could be, even according to that there, that the royal jelly, which is also produced by the bee, is mutter. And then he says it has a very unpleasant and sour, bitter taste, which is true because I've tasted it. Totally inedible, really, until you start to mix it with other things. And therefore, he wants to say it's going to be mutter b'taruvos, or maybe even possibly on its own, but certainly mutter b'taruvos, because any taste which it gives is extremely bitter, and therefore it will be bottled beroiv. And in fact, when you have royal jelly, which is an extremely expensive substance, as you can imagine, even if you feed the queen bee all of its life, it's only a bee, it doesn't need a great deal of royal jelly. I can't remember exactly the statistics, but you can buy royal jelly today from minimum very small capsule or something, sort of £15-20, to £85, £100, depending, of course, on the purity of the royal jelly that you're buying. And usually it's diluted down, you're only getting 1.5-2% or something like that. So he is Matya. Dain Padva also, Zichron Yevracha, in Cheshiva Eifog, is also, although he starts off being more machmeh and he wants to say even according to Rabbeinu Yaakov with the Gezeres HaKosov, it could be that the Gezeres HaKosov, actually the Gezeres HaKosov is a husofa on top of the mamatzos, machnisos beinu mamatzos, on top of the fact that it's a negative, also need a Gezeres HaKosov, because it's got to have a kind of rationale to it. But having started off being, and therefore it wouldn't apply to royal jelly, which does not cover, but having started off being more machmeh, he comes to the conclusion also for similar reasons to Diane Waldenberg, since it's bitter and he wants to tie it, it's pirusha ba'alma, it is mere excretion, like excrement, which is called pirusha ba'alma, where there's no hilchus kashrus on such things. Somebody who's machmeh about this is going too far. It's zichron mutter, he says. Interestingly, we had an occasion where a younger man, who Rob actually, who dabbles a little bit in various business issues and lives here in Golden Green, some of you may know him, and he used to produce a royal jelly called Irene Stein. That was the brand. Irina Stein. He came to Dan Pazza for a Hechsha, and Dan Pazza didn't want to give him a Hechsha, notwithstanding what he writes, Misha Yachma Egnel Amelim Asmiyim. He didn't want to give him a Hechsha. I heard, I think, because his Rebbe didn't agree with the Torah that he'd written. His Rebbe wasn't much of such a thing. Well, maybe he felt he did his Mutter to eat. Start giving Hechsha with another thing. You know, give it a Hechsha. It's his Mutter. I'll be a his Mutter. But anyway, he sent him to the Beis Din to get the Hechsha from us, no doubt, because he felt if you're really producing it, you should have a proper. But be careful what you say when everything's being. Anyway, what are we going to do about Balak insect? Very briefly, as we come to a conclusion, Balak insect. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a long tshuva on lak, which is used widely also today. I say in confectionery products. I actually went to a factory where, in days gone by, we did not allow lak, shellac as a confectioner's glaze for products listed, even this product listed in the kashrus guide. I went to a factory and I found that their product, chocolate raisins, which we were listing as non-kosher. They said, oh, we have a rabbi comes regularly to this factory, and it was another Haredi Hesher who used to come to the factory and make a kosher version of chocolate raisins. And I said, what changes do you make? He said, oh, no changes at all. I said, what about the confection of glaze? Oh, no, we're exactly the same. I said, you use the shallot? Yeah, we use the shallot. So I came back to the Zionim and I said, this is the Mishigas. In our customs guide, we list chocolate raisins from this company, Payne's, as non-kosher. And then underneath it, we have this certain from Haredi make as kosher has got Hesher, and it's exactly the same product. And Chosha Moshe is Makel, at least for the Kashrus guide, we ought to be Makel. But we changed our policy then, and we allowed Shellac for products in the Kashrus guide, like to Moshe, and I think most other Hechsherim in the world today. But I think the other Haredi Hechsherim, they found out about it, they started to be Machme, and they dropped out reverse the polls over there. But Rav Moshe is Mati for various reasons. Number one, he says, of course, if you say, like the first day, Machnisos Einem Amatzos, so this is also Mamatzos. This is also Machnisos, it's merely a reprocessing of the resin. Secondly, he says, interesting, that this also, even according to Rabbi Yaakov, only after something which has a shem Levi, and I don't consider this lack, this shellac, as having a shem Levi. And therefore, it is the substance produced by the sheretz, the main substance produced by the sheretz, could be even according to the other day, is mutter. Another one he says, very interesting, is that since it is hard, like solid, it's like plastic really, it's not roi la'achila, and even if afterwards you change it, but essentially it's not roi la'achila. And fourthly, he says, very interesting thing, that he's been told by the experts, by the scientists, that shellac is not digested by the body. It goes in at one end, and it essentially goes through the human body. It's not digested. It goes in, it comes out. It's like swallowing a stone, he says. You swallow a stone. There's no halachos of kashrus on a stone, because it's not edible. It's not something which you digest. You know, kabolo kachpolto, you might say. As it goes in, it comes out. And therefore, it's not relevant to hilchos lo shayach be achil of lo shayach le'isra, he says. And furthermore, he says, the Gvalda Chidish, which is similar to that which Daniel Waldenberg says, that since it has no taste at all, and it's also mixed in together with other things, he says it's bottled the road. Even though normally, as we know, we need shishim, but you only need shishim when there is taste. And even with minba mino, it's a gezeira also putting it in eno mino, because you might taste it. But it has no taste at all, he says, and it's not shayach to be able to taste it in anything, but there's taste. So therefore, he's mustered the road. Very, very briefly, what about the beeswax? Which is very parallel really to the royal jelly, because it also comes out of glands, although these different glands, the glands on the stomach of the bee. And people point out that it must be mutter. First of all, if it wasn't mutter, there'd be a shayla of kovush. The honey's been sitting in there for more than 24 hours. And if the wax is offer, there'd be a shayla of kovush. Secondly, routinely in the processing, it is melted. And therefore, if there wasn't kovush, the issa would come across. Thirdly, there's lots of shaylas in the post, lots of discussion in Shulchan Aruch about ragli hadavorim, the bees' knees, you might say. The bees' knees, they weren't able to filter that out in days gone by. They didn't have very good filters, and therefore you get the wasps out, you get the bees out, you didn't get the little legs out. So what about the legs? So they used to eat the honey with the legs, and the post can say it's mutter, we won't go into that now. So, but they only discussed the legs, they didn't discuss the wax. There's certainly bits of wax in there, and on my the wax is clearly also mutter. I saw it is relevant to Chanukah, although we just passed it, a very nice raya also brought that Rav Shlomo Kluger says that you're not allowed to use something traced like tallow for the neiros of Chanukah. The Hutrel and Lechot Shemayim Elishol Bahima Tahira Bilvad. And that the Ramal says Nogim B'medinas Elu Lahadlik V'neiros Sil Shavo. Our minig is to use wax candles. And shavo means beeswax. So therefore you see that beeswax was mutter. Propolis is made of pollen and resin and wax, a little bit of saliva. If we're going to allow the wax, then we could allow propolis as well, and basically most people can do. I'd like to just conclude, if I may, just with a kasha and a ha'ara. My kasha is, why on earth is beeswax, why on earth does HaKadosh Baruch Hu make this exception, as it were, and allow us to have honey, which comes from a trace of source? If you wanted to have honey because it's so delicious and it's pure and it's good for mankind, make it from a kosher source. I mean, it's a Hashkofa question. I was troubled by it, I was thinking about it. But I came across, by coincidence, there's no coincidences, I came across a maisa about Rav Shach, and a very troubled yeshiva bacher comes to see him, and he feels very, very pressured, and he's got lots of sorrows, and he's lost all his self-esteem. Anyway, he tells this, pulls his heart out to Rav Shach, and Rav Shach sits there quietly stirring his honey into his lemon tea. And the bacher's sitting there waiting for an answer, and then Rav Shach looks up with a smile on his face, and he says, you know, the bee is one of the most maddening, irritating, and bothersome creatures. It flies after you, can't escape from it, you flap it away, it comes back again, it buzzes around you, and it's got this really painful sting, it's nothing but sorrows. But if you're prepared to endure the irritation and the nuisance and the pain of the bees, you'll be rewarded with the delight and the sweetness of the honey. From which he learned that sometimes you have to go through trials and tribulations in life, but in the end, it is in the end you're rewarded with it. And I saw actually the Chizkuni says that the six gifts which they brought down to Yosef are keneged the Vol Sadorim. I assume he means the Vol Sadorim was the Torah Shabbat. Shenamah Mesukim Mitzvash Venofes Tufin. Doesn't bring a riot for any of the others. But, you know, Mesukim Mitzvash Venofes Tufin is Torah. So maybe this limud is particularly appropriate to Torah, you know, Odom Kiyomos Ba'oyal, without toil and struggle, you cannot merit to enjoy the richness and the sweetness and the joy and delight of Torah in particular. May we all be Zeicha, to both in our lives and in our Torah, to enjoy only the sweetness and not the sting of the Beis Kol Tzedek.